Probably start with like five different jokes.
No, I think we've like started already.
Terrible jokes. It'll be great. Mm. It'll be like an anti five jokes. You could just start with like yo mama so fat jokes. Everybody loves them.
Yo mama so fat she listens to the Never From Concentrate podcast.
Oh!
Snap.
Alright, let's do this.
Alright, right. You probably have to probably have to be a bit closer for the mic.
Yeah. I want my voice to be as strong as yours. My opinion matters equally.
All right. Good morning, Ratchet.
Good morning.
We are in my apartment. I am drinking a fruit smoothie. We're drinking coffee that I know. What do you think of the coffee?
It's good. It's good. Pike Place is still number one in my heart, but it's very good. I enjoy it.
Jimi Hendrix's AeroPress. That I have. I've been using. That's like my most used Amazon purchase ever. I use it like every morning.
Well, it's unfair because, you know, it's going to be throttled way high in the sky because you buy hundreds of books that you don't read.
I know.
So it's just spreading the curve really, really to the top.
Well, I feel like I'm going to buy like a new coffee maker. There's going to be like a wall of coffee makers. So I'll be like, that one's the best.
But the good thing about buying that many books is that when you have, you know, get-togethers and stuff, people think you're so smart automatically. They're like, wow, look at all these books this guy has.
It's all about appearances.
Yeah, and you just need to read the front cover, back cover, maybe like a random page in between, and you're good to go.
That's
how I got this far in life. And
exactly. That
summarizes
look at
me right now.
My life strategy. All right. So, maybe you should talk about, that quote. You like that quote. What was the quote you liked?
Which quote was it? The one that you started with?
No, the one that I tweeted.
The one that you tweeted, yes.
At Valentine P. At Tucker.
I don't want to mess it up. It's
yeah, so a developed country is not one where the poor drive cars. It's one where the rich take public transportation. What do you think about that? You know where I got that?
Where? Who said it?
Some mayor in Bolivia, I think. I got it from the website of this app called the Transit app.
Uh-huh.
It was said by Enrique Penalosa, ex-mayor of Bogota. Is Bogota in Bolivia? Do you know?
I don't know.
It is the capital of Colombia, not Bolivia. All our Colombian listeners are pissed off.
Sorry, guys. Now we know. Now we know. We'll never make a mistake again. Bogota. Yeah, it's fantastic. That's what I find in my worldly travels thus far. The places that are, I feel I don't know, whatever this means, but I feel a greater sense of community is where their public transportation is fantastic. Like, you see that you're traveling with all kinds of classes, or you're not even thinking about that, rather. Mm-hmm. Like, when I went to Amsterdam, their trams and their network of, they had a bunch of bike lanes there, too, so most people were biking. It's a very bike-heavy country in general, but
yeah.
The trams that they had there were fantastic, like, get anywhere you want to go.
Better than the tramps, right?
Yeah. those were, I don't know, it's debatable. And those are also classless. Also.
Oh, yeah.
Like anybody can go. There is this one alley.
Take a ride.
There is this one alley that you just don't want to go to, though. It's just, you know, I'm just going to leave it at that, not to upset any of our tramp listeners.
But yeah, so I recently got back from San Francisco, and I was telling you that one of the things that I didn't like about the city is that the public transportation is not particularly good, and it also is this. There seems to be a divide where a lot of the people who have more money do now take things like Uber and Lyft, and even, well, I guess, I don't know if they take taxis or not, but basically Uber and Lyft, and then no one takes this public transportation.
So what happened before Uber and Lyft?
That's a good question. I kept asking people that. I was like, so people just didn't do shit? They're like, what the fuck? Like, what happened? And I don't know. People were like, yeah, people took taxis, and that's how they got around or something, because just that's the only way.
And like the public transportation system wasn't used extensively at all. Like, it was only used when it first came around, the streetcars in San Francisco.
So,
like in the
70s. In the main heart of San Francisco, they have a bunch of streetcars that are mostly used, it looks like, by tourists, essentially. But then if you want to go into, like, other parts of the city, like the Mission
Is it the Mission or is it Mission?
I don't know. Like,
just
into Mission?
Let me give you a hint. Yeah. Drop the duck.
So okay. How do you say it? How do you say it?
Mission.
So if you want to go into Mission?
Yeah.
That sounds weird.
No. Drop the duck. That's what Zuckerberg said. Look where he's at now, man.
Yo, we gotta use the Facebook. Everyone's on their iPhones, ordering some Ubers or some Lyfts and stuff like that. And that, to me, felt a little weird.
Yeah. I think that public transportation is a great segue in terms of seeing how a vote or voting for something can create a lot of problems. Because it's easy to vote for something that has an immediate effect. Like, I want to vote for this referendum that's going to make pot legal, and I'll be able to go tomorrow and smoke weed. Like, I have that instant gratification. Whereas with public transportation, any of people who are getting elected, or you're voting for the people who are vouching for it, we're not going to see the benefits for that for another, 10 years, 20 years down the road, right? So it creates that long-term, short-term divide, which I think often people get upset with in voting, and that dichotomy exists in that the problem with voting.
But don't you think that's not just voting, that's sort of just the society we live in terms of a lot of it is very short-sighted. Our whole economic system is based on the quarterly results.
Yes, Valentin, but we're trying to segue into voting. You are right. But that was a segue.
No, it's a good segue. On that point, something we didn't talk about that could have been interesting in the blogs was in the blogosphere was this notion of being able to call a global vote on something. So in California, if you get, I think it's 500,000 signatures.
Yeah.
You can bring to vote anything you want. And then I don't think they have to put the final thing into law, but then it becomes like an official bill or something other. I'm probably screwing up the details of this. But essentially, the main idea is that you get enough signatures, then they call a referendum on the entire freaking state, which has like more people than Canada. Everyone has to vote yay or nay on like this one thing. And they've done it a few times with I think gay marriage has been brought up in various spending things, which is a technique a lot of people think is very polarizing, because then essentially you just make the entire political game for a few months about this one topic.
Yeah.
Of are you yes or no on this? And you just split everyone. Whereas it's not I don't know, maybe we should, try to compromise. No. Are you yes or no on this one particular issue?
Well, the other side of the coin is, if you don't have that, then your voice may get lost with your politician or your elected representative, right? So
that's the idea, is that if you elect representatives and say they're just not discussing the things you want them to discuss, if enough people care, so like 500,000 people care, you have this option, this route to take to try and force them to call a referendum on some particular issue.
Yeah, I was actually looking up. I wanted to talk about referendums earlier on, but I think I got sidetracked. There's a lot of pluses and I think even more cons with referendums too. That's why I think they don't get used as much as you'd expect it to. Because on a surface level, when you tell a kid hey, there's this issue, you're gonna vote for it, oh yeah, that makes sense. There's a specific issue, and I'm gonna get to vote for it, and then it's gonna be resolved.
But I think that comes down to the problem of when you're a child, you do think that a lot of issues are black and white, or have two very opposing viewpoints, and one is more correct, one is less correct. But a lot of times, there's like, you know, so many different subtleties and 10 different viewpoints and you know, no correct answer that. I think that's where the trouble comes in.
Yeah, and also when you have a referendum, the people who actually the people sometimes who want to have that discourse to make, like, it's exactly what you were saying before, like making it a yes or no issue or black or white issue. The people who want to have that discourse often can't get that voice out as you'd expect them to, because it becomes like so polarizing. So that medium, this that gray area discussion, mm-hmm. you can't, you know, have an amendment to that referendum afterwards, because there's this new idea that we want to throw in there that makes sense, and there's a sense of compromise. You can't do that, right?
Yep.
It just becomes, are you on this extreme or are you on that extreme, right?
Exactly. So, like, just to bring an example of, like, a famous Canadian referendum. So, Quebec, 1995, voted, and I'll read what the referendum... So, there was a specific... And this is also a hot... A topic also that I think this is a matter of debate as how do you phrase this? How do you phrase this question to ask people? And the question was phrased like this: do you agree that Quebec should become sovereign after having made a formal offer to Canada for a new economic and political partnership within the scope of the bill respecting the future of Quebec and of the agreement signed on June 12th, 1995? Yes or no? So basically the question is, do you agree that Quebec should become sovereign, or should become its own state?
Yeah.
And
I feel like that's, like, just worded in such a way that you just know that going into this referendum that yes means I want it to be separate and no means I don't want it. Nobody's going to be actually reading that entire thing and be like, okay, what are they really implying with these sets of phrases, and what does that really mean? No, it's just... Getting it to be, I really don't even think that matters, especially when you,
so
when the media is being covered, or when the media is covering the referendum and what people are going to vote yes or no, people are just going to go there, they're going to do yes or no, and they're not going to really read the question. Probably like less than 10%, I'd guess.
I agree. Sometimes,
especially when it's so long.
I think the reason why this was also a hot topic was because, and then the first referendum, which is 1970-something.
Yeah.
The question, and maybe like... media didn't play as huge of a role. Maybe some people, like in rural areas, just, you know, listen to radio sometimes, but did actually care about the question itself.
Yeah.
There was some controversy over a particular statement. I can't remember what it was. And so they really concentrated on this. But anyway, so the outcome was 50.58% no, 49.42% yes.
And which is insane.
With the slimmest of margins. Quebec did not try to separate in 1995. And I remember there was a big, there's a lot of people thought that the reason why, like, that difference was made up of a lot of people, like, who went to McGill and Concordia, who, because Quebec has this rule that you become a resident after 6 months. So if you go to McGill, you're mostly English speaking, probably from Ontario or somewhere out west.
Mm-hmm.
But after 6 months, you're a Quebec resident. So when you vote, you're obviously going to vote. You don't want to separate. Or,
yeah,
like,
yeah.
For most people would vote like that. So a lot of people thought that the referendum was stolen by all these, like, Anglophones and, like, sort of Montrealers who were there but weren't, like, lifetime, you know, Québécois or anything like that.
But this is a perfect example of, like, how terrible this would be if it actually passed through for Quebec. Like, they would be completely screwed economically in the long term. Their entire... treaties that we have with, like, the trade treaties we have with the U.S., they're, I don't know, like, maybe they'll be doing really good in the Pan Am Games, because, like, all our athletes come from there. But, like, honestly, it would be terrible, and it just became an issue of national pride, or provincial pride, or cultural pride, and that's where people were voting from. That's why this vote was coming from. It wasn't being thought of the real... Maybe at some degree it was. I'm oversimplifying it. But for the most part, people who were voting, like the average, you know, citizen there, was like, I am a Quebecois, I'm going to vote for this. And that's why. And, like, that would be ridiculous if that actually came to pass.
So here's a point that we haven't talked about. One thing referendums do, because they are so simple...
Do-do.
They spur voter turnout. So... for the Quebec referendum, don't look. Guess what was the voter turnout out of all Quebec residents that could vote? what percentage?
86.3.
93.5.
Wow.
Yeah. Basically, everyone, like, that 7.5% was probably, like, people who couldn't move. Or, like, yeah, yeah. You know, that's basically everyone who was in Quebec voted.
Did they have the day off?
That's a good question. I don't think so. It was, what day was it on? Not sure.
Or if it was on a weekend.
Yeah, that's a good question. I'm not sure. October. No, this is results. 1995. Not sure. Not sure. But I doubt they got. That'd be funny if they got like a provincial holiday. So that is one interesting part is when you make things so simple. There, you know, you sort of get rid of all these different subtleties and things like that. That it may be bad, but it does do the thing that we were talking about. Was you know, it
increases voting.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah. Like often, the subtleties is what make the process lethargic and slow. And
yep.
You know, that's where people complain that things don't move because people keep arguing about tiny little details that don't really provide actual value to any of the citizens. So there is definitely a divide, which is why it's not a perfect system, but it's still, I guess, it's not as easy black and white of an issue as you'd expect it to be.
What did you
or you didn't expect it to be.
What did you think of my idea of giving tax breaks to people who vote in certain elections?
Like the positive reinforcement
yeah.
versus the negative?
Yeah.
I think that could be easily like politicized, that it'd be...
I agree too, but like, what in principle, what do you think, like...
I think it should be, to be honest, I think you should have both. I think you should have both
positives. You should give him tax breaks and, like, a penalty?
Yeah, like, it should be, I don't know. The thing is, I also, to some degree, voting, like, you know, one of the other points that you brought up was, to answer your first question, I think they should do both. If the end goal is just to increase voter turnout,
yeah.
then you should do both. Like, there's, why not? You can earn revenue. You get people, you know, give more people incentive, positive and negative. It's better conditioning for the entire population.
Okay.
Psychologist means like, duh, why not do both? In general, like voting still, the biggest problem I have with it is that whole analysis that, you know, the little data analysis I did was, it doesn't feel like your vote matters. You know, and you brought up the point of, like, let's go to, like, the different extremes. When you have five people in a room and you're voting on who gets to sleep on the bed and who has to sleep on the floor, you know, it's a very easy vote and or easy thought that your vote matters,
yeah.
right? And when you go to the infinite scale, like there's no reason to voting at all. But I think even after you go to maybe, like, 150, 200 people, that vote doesn't feel... like it matters as much unless you're kind of being swayed by another person or there's like an elected representative and
so
it loses that value. I can't.
So maybe we have to think, maybe people really have to think about it in like a Kantian sense where it's not the end outcome. It's not, because you're thinking about it like from like a utilitarian perspective, so to speak. Like you're thinking about it, what will this mean afterwards? Will it actually have some influence? But what about thinking about like voting is just a good thing to do? You're expressing, it doesn't matter if your one particular vote does anything. It's just you live in a society that, you know, this should be something that you take. It's like,
why are you making it such a sexy thing? The whole point is supposed to be about you having a vote for,
well, I mean,
this person,
we started this whole conversation. We started this whole conversation with the dichotomy of, you know, people in like Syria or somewhere, you know, Egypt, fighting, like basically dying for their right to sort of like elect someone they care about, and they're not thinking about things like, well, you know, we have millions of people, my vote's not going to count, you know.
Yeah, well, there's a lot of other reasons to that too. Like they have, you know, a leader before or a system before that was absolutely terrible, so they're going to go try another system that's worked for a few countries. It doesn't mean that the vote necessarily still matters, right? Or that that's going
right.
That's going to mean anything.
Yeah. I mean, and even like, even if you can, in theory, think that, will most people, you know, in a Western country, suddenly think, oh yeah, like, I think this should be my due date. I think the people who do turn out like that, probably like 40 to 50% of people who really care, maybe like when, you know, you're under 30, you don't really have maybe as many, I don't know, kids. I don't know. It'd be interesting to see who, is there some common feature of people who have consistently, say, like, have voted in, like, more than two-thirds of the
political
elections.
Political science graduates.
Maybe. I don't know. Maybe those are, like, even more jaded and they just don't vote out of principle or something. I don't know.
In an ideal world, you'd have tiny communities of maybe, like, 1,000 people. And this was actually brought up with a friend of mine I was discussing. I had, like, the notion of, like, just tiny communities with different values and you just kind of choose. Or actually, the choosing part was his idea. So you just have tiny communities with all of them have different values or different systems or whatever you want to subscribe to. And instead of voting, you just kind of go, I choose this community, I'm going to live there. So when you colonize a different, or you start a colony in a different planet, that's an idea in the future. So future, you know, space exploration and future colonizers of the galaxy, listen to this. You know, this is some knowledge for you.
So you're saying just like give people the options to move freely such that if they don't like their current society, they can just go into a different one or like a...
Yeah, and they're just very small, very tiny.
But the problem is when they're very small, they can't sustain certain things that we... Like that you can't have Super Bowls. You can't have... You know,
it's inherently, like the notion of it is inherently flawed because one of the other very, very innate features of being a human being is to conquer and oppress.
And xenophobia. And, like, I'm sure many of these communities aren't just going to be like, oh, yeah, sure, anyone come. They're going to be like, no black people in our community.
Yeah.
And, like, you know, it's going to, that's how, that's basically how the human race developed. That's, you know, you just had packs and you, like, moved around.
So the more practical solution was to give municipalities a lot more power. Like, a lot more federal power. Like, you give a lot of...
Well, I mean, that's, like, that's a contradiction. Like, what do you mean? Federal means their jurisdiction is municipal. So you're either saying have city-states that spread, like...
Well, give them a lot more, like, federal issues...
Like what though? The problem is like federal issues are something that affect more than one city.
So like just in terms of taxing, like have a lot more of the federal tax devoted to.
But the federal tax is a federal tax because they're doing federal things. Like if you say like give the cities the hospitals, like make them take care. But then like do you want to? Anytime you go to, like, Oshawa, do you want to, like, worry about not being able to use their hospital system and being like, shit, like, how do I... You know, like, there's certain things that I think make more sense and they affect people on a broader scale, so giving...
This isn't a very... This isn't a fully baked idea. I don't know exactly what will work, but I'm saying there
exist some
issues that should be more municipal.
Maybe, yeah. I agree with that idea, especially in Toronto, because I read a lot of things in terms of there's other cities. Toronto's one of the least taxed on its cities in North America for its size. There's a lot more taxes in other cities, and part of it is we just don't have the bylaws. We can't charge them the taxes. Like a lot of other cities have a specific gas tax.
Mm-hmm.
I think Montreal has this.
New York City has like an insane number
of
taxes.
And they use those things to fund, you know, transit and other things, right?
Yeah.
So, and a lot of people, and in Toronto, there's always this talk of like, you know, the gravy train or whatever the hell Ford wants to push, right? So it just seems like there's, for whatever reason, there's now been like a thing that has developed that has preventing new policies and new revenue generating things from taking place. So, and some people think if the city had more power, that would lead to better services and things like that. So,
and more money.
Well, yeah, more money, which would lead to more services. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's what I was talking to a friend of mine yesterday about this. Is like, why are people so afraid of deficits? Like, or like, it's not. I mean, does everyone think we're just going to become Greece in like 2 seconds? Like, I don't understand. If like people are like, well, we don't want to spend this because then we'll have, you know, we'll be in a deficit, or like we'll have some debt.
It's a political thing, though, right?
But like, why? How does it affect personally you? Like, the city has some debt. Sure, you don't. You know, I mean, there's a slippery slope, and you don't want to become Detroit or something. But it seems like certain people just have this complete sort of fear of,
yeah, because it's a political tool. Like, that if this government brought us into a deficit, don't elect this government, elect us, we'll get into surplus. It's just a very easy, we have more money, they had less money.
I see.
Right? That's all it is. But that's how economic cycle, that's how capitalism, this whole country, the U.S. was formed on debt and surplus cycles. They're called cycles for a reason.
Yeah,
they go into small short-term debt and surplus cycles, and there's like a big long-term one, right? Like, that's how the housing market goes, and that's it crashed in a crazy way for that specifically, but you're right. It's absurd that people like have that notion of it.
Like, yeah, like it's especially in Toronto, because it seems like there's some people have this, you know, everyone wants to be a world-class city, but then everyone's like, no, you can't tax, you know, you can't tax cars, you can't add, like, not a mad backyard type of thing. Well, what's it going to be? Like, we're going to need, you know, more money, more revenue to get all these things, and you can't just, it's not going to come out of thin air. And one way of doing it is, you know, because we have such a huge growth spurt, you need some leeway, and you need a certain amount of credit to help you, you know, not have complete congestion and take like 3 hours to get to Mississauga.
I'll vote for you, man.
Do you ever want to be mayor?
I mean, just for the sake of the hilarity of that role of being mayor and having the key to the city. I want to have the key to the city.
You want to have the key to the city.
That's and just to be
it's
like Mayor Quimby.
It's not a key anymore. It's a fob.
Mayor Quimby would be my idol.
Yeah,
to follow along.
I was thinking, you know, it'd be interesting. It'd be cool. Just because it's like, what do you care about? I really care about the city. Like, I really care about Toronto. That'd be really cool to just do that. That'd be like, I'd probably want to be mayor more than I want to be like premier or prime minister.
Yeah, I agree with that. In lieu of what Ford has done, it's a less politicized role, and it's a more hands-on, do specific things, tangible, like, hey, I get to, you know, build this road here, and you see that was, you know, an idea that I had, and you can see that happen.
Yeah.
Like, if you're prime minister, you're on a bigger scale, and you make a decision for this region, and then people make those decisions there, so you don't kind of see that tangible result.
Right, it's less local. What did you think of, have you heard of gerrymandering before? I think I misspelled it, actually. Wow, I forgot the N. So this has come up a lot recently. It's essentially the whole idea of when you split certain districts, you're supposed to split them in a way that, roughly, you have the same amount of people in each district, right? So, like, California has a shit ton of these kind of districts, and each district has some representative, whereas certain other states have, you know, three or four because they're just completely barren. But the problem is that depending on how you split them, you can get certain districts, for instance, that are going to be 90% Republican, you know, for fact, and you just don't care about them anymore. And so that becomes like an advantage because you can now focus all of your effort onto a specific, you know, other district. That's one way of getting an advantage. Whereas, you know, maybe the Democrats now have two districts that are like 52%, you know, or like 46% registered Democrats or something like that, and then they have to sort of split their time, and then that becomes
worse. It's like, even just talking about this stuff, it just drives me insane. Like, I don't even want to get involved into this stratosphere. It's so mind-bogglingly annoying. Like, it may be interesting as like a strategic, like, if you're just thinking as a game, like, how do I win this game?
Well, that's what people think about,
right?
Yeah.
There's people, like, well, I don't know what their titles are, but, like, it's insane. Like, Nate Silver, he predicted it probably based on a lot of these different you know, outcomes that people have generated in that way, and it just bought. Like, I can't even. I'm looking at you and just like melting right now. It's mind-bogglingly annoying. But one thing that makes me okay though, and I think I brought it up when I initially wrote the first response to your post, is for the most part, I think I wrote this, but if not, here it is anyway. For the most part, you're gonna get some sort of average balance of the opinion of your country in some elected representative, whether it's one side a Democrat or another side a Republican. It's going to be somewhere there. Like, there's going to be a public opinion that people have, maybe to be extremes on some specific issues, but generally we care about, you know, healthcare in Canada. We're going to have like some. Like the important
things. You're saying
things.
The important things are going to come out in the wash, is what you're
saying.
Yeah,
and then so, you know, for me, that like I after that point, like the little issues here and there, my day to day life, I don't care.
So I would say that's.
If I don't care, I'll move to Europe. And
yeah, that's a very privileged opinion.
It is a very privileged opinion. Right, like, I'm not saying it isn't.
We live in a wonderful country where we can say that. We're like, you know what? I don't really worry about things.
It's true. I just get my burritos and my coffee. I need a coffee in the morning, a burrito at 3 a.m.,
yeah.
and I have a solid day.
Yeah,
there's nothing much more than that.
Yeah, you're not like worrying about, you know, anti-aircraft missiles like shooting down. You don't care about that. You don't have that in Canada. So I agree. So that comes back to the point we talked about is you know, maybe it's just there's this natural sort of, you know, complementary thing where you just care more when shit hits the fan, and then voting becomes more important. And then as democracy, you know, makes things more prosperous, people care less, and then maybe the whole thing just goes back to being, like more
deficit.
Shitty. Yeah. And then people start caring
a
again.
Public opinion deficit.
Yeah. It's like it always has to sort of, like, oscillate in that fashion where people only care when, you know, someone's signaling an alarm, someone's like...
Yeah, it's like a homeostasis thing. That's the way
humans
operate. If things are okay, then like you're gonna chill, relax, and you know, when things get down, you're like, oh god, I gotta fix this. You know, get myself to respond to this problem area.
Yeah. The question is though, is it like, because you could still have some homeostasis about, say, like the general trend of whatever, you know, is upwards because of, I don't know, different factors, maybe, like, there's just more technology, maybe, is creating more value, things like that, but you're sort of oscillating about this linear curve that's going up, or linear line that's going up, and you're so the end result is still, even if you have a little dip, you're still sort of trending up, or is it, you know, something else where we actually need to, this is, you know, could be more unstable in terms of, like...
That's why I think vote... so, like, if I was somebody planning society and less just, like, talking in hypotheticals and just,
that's,
you know...
But that's where planning society is.
Yeah, but, like, if I was planning society, I would make voting a mandatory thing, right?
Yeah.
And make... And what you said also, making it a holiday, right?
Yeah.
So, and having those reinforcements. Because at least if you don't care... You know, you're going to have some incentive structures to make you care, and human beings need incentive structures. Otherwise, it's very difficult for us to do much. That's just the way we work. So when you have that, you can at least increase, like maybe change the line, maybe get even a bigger subset of people to care when they wouldn't think about it, that they would in their day, because now this is something that they're forcing. Like, oh, now since I'm going to get a tax break, or since I'm going to have to pay a fee, maybe I'll have to think about it, or like, read an article. There will be more articles to read because there is like a bigger population to service, right? So it'll maybe increase that dial or that line to a more positive sphere. Not even a positive sphere. It'll just, you know, increase it to the direction of public opinion in that country or in that province or state or whatever.
Yeah. Okay. I mean, I generally agree. The one thing that
Can we disagree on something? Like,
I know.
It's annoying.
Disagreeing. Yeah. So I will say. Let me just bring
now.
I disagree. Well, so the one thing is that I think in principle, there's something weird about having to force people to vote. Like, as in, like, you're basically telling them, we're going to fine you if you don't vote. It seems sort of against the spirit of democracy. It's
screw the spirit.
Like, but then it's not democracy anymore. Then it's like, it's some weird, like, other thing that's not really...
Australia is a weird other thing?
So what do they have specific? Like, maybe. Yeah. It might, and Australia is a pretty small country. It's like 20-something million people. So, and they're fairly uniform in their, like, they don't have that much diversity. They're definitely not Canada, and they're definitely not the States. So maybe it works in that kind of society. But as a general theme of, like, having to punish people for not voting, I think it's just a weird, it's a bad message to send. It should be something that people, like I said, it should be a thing that is, you know, something you enjoy to do. It's something that is part of, like, a developed modern society that you cherish.
You're using a lot of shoulds, but what happens?
I'm not saying that it's everyone does this, but, you know, then we got to think about, like, what kind of society do you want to live in? Is that really... Where, you know, are people going to get really complacent and just be like, well, you know, I don't want to have to pay my speeding ticket, so I'm going to have to go and, like... Or is it like, you know what, I don't want some other person to fucking, like, blow me off the road, so I think, you know, if I don't speed, maybe they won't speed. Or whatever, if I don't drive unsafely, they won't drive unsafely, and then we'll live happily ever after. Or is it just, we need a police state that tells us, no, 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 like, I'm going to fine you.
Yeah, but... You know, like, what's the other side of the coin, right? You want people, like, then it becomes that sense of complacency that you get when you're in a stable state of affairs.
I would argue that the complacency comes from the fines. I think if in a society where you are your choices, you're doing this out of your own will, that's where that's not complacency. That's you're consciously doing these things. Whereas if the only reason you're doing them is because someone's going to hand you a fine, I think that's complacency. That's you're not even thinking about whether that's right or wrong. It's just, oh, I don't know, someone just wrote this is illegal, or someone wrote this is it's going to fine, so I have to do it.
Sure, that's true.
It's like the whole, you know, drugs, right? War on drugs or marijuana. So, like, why is most people, if you ask them, like, you know, the people who still think it should be illegal, it's like, well, because it's been illegal for, like, so long. Drugs.
Yeah, it doesn't change someone's real opinion on something, or it doesn't reflect that.
Yeah.
And or, like, their real behavior.
Yeah, so... Yeah, that's that's another point.
Good argument. Yeah.
10 points for Gryffindor.
Yes, 10 points. I think you're right with the positive reinforcement and also making it a holiday.
Yeah.
I think that
I don't understand why it's not.
Yeah, the holiday thing is almost an obvious thing.
I think the real thing is, though, there might be some gray area. Like, what about if it's a by-election? Like, what if it's just, like, two ridings somewhere that have to get elected?
At least a federal, provincial, federal holiday for a federal election.
Yeah.
And you can have a provincial holiday or make all the provinces vote at the same time and have it on.
No, I think you can do that. That's impossible.
I don't know. Yeah, right? Yeah. There could be a solution there's a holiday on those two levels at the very minimum.
In fact, I think what I was saying is the reason why that hasn't been implemented, because every time someone suggests it, people are like, yeah, but, like, what if Joe Schmo has to get by-elected and, like, riding Zed, do we give him, like, his own holiday? It's absurd. And then people just go, okay, whatever, this is too complicated, let's move on. I think in principle it is definitely an idea, because, I mean, especially for federal elections, it just doesn't, I don't... You know, you could easily make that.
It makes it more of, like, it adds, you know, the political message of voting becomes a more positive thing. Oh, it's a day off, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm happy on voting day.
Yeah, you take all your friends and you go to the voting booth.
Maybe it gives people some popsicles after they vote. More
positive
reinforcement.
Positive reinforcement.
Here's a popsicle. Yeah. Good job,
buddy.
People
campaign outside with different, like, party popsicles.
I definitely would vote for the Red Party.
You like fruit
liberals
punch.
Are all me. Yeah, fruit punch, man.
When did fruit punch become red? Like, why is that a thing? Where
it doesn't make any sense. I think it's just more of a like the color red is more appealing than.
But like, what fruit is red? What juice is red from fruit punch?
Blood orange, maybe.
Blood orange. That's
the only thing. Because all it's mostly berries, right? And berries are usually purple.
What's in fruit punch? No, it's usually like apple juice and orange juice, isn't that fruit punch?
But like, I think berries is one of the main ingredients. Like strawberries.
No, that's berry juice. Like, there's field berry juice. You can get
strawberries,
that.
Definitely.
Okay, orange juice, lemonade, pineapple juice.
Really?
Strawberries. No, but this is Paula Deen. She's some southern.
Yeah, she's whack. We want just some concentrate. Although, you know, it's against our values.
Shit!
But that's just, I didn't want
to
know.
Orange juice and lemonade, apparently, is the thing to do.
Orange juice, lemonade,
pineapple juice, ginger ale.
Interesting.
But that's like one of those, you know.
See, look at that. That's berries.
Yeah, that's not fruit punch, though.
That's
like,
fruit punch, man.
And that's like, just cherries.
No, there's some oranges in there.
Anyways, we're digressing.
Well, you know, it's a very...
it's an important matter.
It's an important matter. Yeah, we're discussing
juices. What the hell? If mango fruit punch, then it's just mango punch. Oh, I guess there's other fruit. Tangerine.
It packs a punch.
What the hell's a safflower? Do you know what a safflower is?
No idea.
Oh, man. At least it's going to listen to this. You'd be like, you don't know what a safflower is? How did you live for 24 years?
Can you make us some juices? Put safflowers in it.
Future Elise, please bring juice.
Whenever you're listening to this, surprise us. I really hope she acts.
Okay, so in conclusion, let's...
In conclusion.
Do you have any other thoughts about our posts? What'd you think?
A very grade 10 essay. In conclusion, yeah. Let's summarize the three things.
Thus, we have
therefore, we win.
We have argued.
I hate that essay structure. It's 3 points, and those 3 points are three paragraphs. Then you summarize. First, you go broad to narrow thesis, then narrow thesis to broad.
God. So I hate it, but honestly, that's. Otherwise, can you imagine marking exams or something? Like, if it's in high school, otherwise you have to just take off essays as...
No, but the thing is that people still do this in, like, third year university papers.
That's
I was like, are you kidding me?
Ridiculous.
Like, I actually had an argument with one of the TAs. She's like, this is the way that, you know, I'm marking. And, like, so there's no, like, straying away from the lines. You're just going to take, like, randomly... A mark off out of 10. It's like 10% off because you strayed away from this random structure that we've been following since grade 10. Just arbitrarily.
No, that's ridiculous.
It's
ridiculous. Sure. So next topic?
Yeah.